You're listening to the Pinball Podcast with Don and Jeff.
Hey, this is the Pinball Podcast for April 12th, 2015. My name is Don. With me today is Jeff. How are you, Jeff?
I'm doing great. How are you doing?
I'm doing great. I don't remember.
Coffee McCoffikins.
Yeah, I have an allergic cough, an allergy cough or whatever. I don't know where it came from, but heads up, listeners. Taylor,
probably allergens.
The allergens are in the air. Taylor, you're going to want to put mufflers on your earplugs or whatever.
So this is immediately getting off the rails, but I got into a debate the other day about which season of the year is best. Now, in Utah, we have four distinct seasons. We're currently in spring, as is most of North America, or all of North America. And their argument was spring is the greatest because, like, you've just been through winter and all that crap and you're excited. But my counter argument is no, it's not. My supporting points would be in the fall, you don't have pollen. The weather is a bit more stable. You have better outdoor activity opportunities because spring's kind of mushy a little bit, you know, especially if you go up hiking and stuff. It's muddy and wet and whatever. You have better food available. Can you disagree with me right now? Fall is better than spring?
Yeah, fall is the best season of the four.
Okay, we're done talking about it then.
No, I was failing to see how that tied into niftyled.com, but yeah, fall is definitely
because
the best.
Because Nifty LED is the fall season of LED sellers.
I like it. All four seasons have their perks, but overall...
Spring for a large order. Don't fall for the trappings of the other guys.
Summer better than others. But right. Winter, I don't know. All right, niftyled.com.
Winter season.
Winter is one of the seasons. NiftyLED.com. They've got a wide selection of LEDs, mods, pinballs, all kinds of stuff. Rubbers. Every day something new over at niftyled.com.
Pinball rubbers.
They got free shipping over $100 and $5 flat rate shipping under $100. French fry trays. Super fast service. And as an aside, I became friends with Daniel on Facebook, Daniel of niftyled.com, and he's posting cool pinball stuff all the time. So if you're friends with them, pay attention, I guess. I don't know. It's just an aside.
They had the best April Fool's announcement, I thought.
They did have an excellent one. Okay, let me pull that up real quick.
Not only was the product funny, it was in Comic Sans, which just made my day.
Oh, why wouldn't it be?
Yeah.
Okay, and actually he posts some of it to the Nifty LED page. Like he had changed the wood rails on his Genie and it shows before and after pictures on the Nifty LED Facebook site. Anyway.
Yeah, looked nice.
So their April Fool's gag, I wish it were true, but it is the announcement of Dark Palladium Extreme bulbs guaranteed to burn your retinas.
There's like 20 LEDs on a
There's
4-inch long stick.
Yeah, there's more than 20. I can see 20 just on the facing side. It says, for the connoisseur of pinball that doesn't want to be bothered with actually having to see your play field to play pinball. So, pretty funny.
That's awesome.
They must be getting emails. Oh, yeah, those are good, but can you add more, more, more?
I've got a fever.
Yes.
And the only cure is more LEDs.
We shared it on our Facebook, so I don't know. I guess I could screen cap this for non-Facebookers. It's good stuff. Use the Facebook.
Yep.
Big Brother wants you to use.
Yeah.
Anyway. Okay, Nifty LED. Good job, guys. A+. We sold a couple more shirts. I actually need to do an inventory, so thank you for folks who were buying shirts. Appreciate that. And, oh, gosh. What's his name? Big shout out to the guy. Somebody donated to the show, and I kicked a little of it your way this time. Crap. I want to say his name is John. I don't have it in front of me.
Well, Kevin has a recurring $10 every month, so he's like top donor of all time.
He's in the Gold Club. Pinball Podcast.
We like Kevin.
He needs a green jacket. A silver jacket.
Yeah, I think so.
One of those. What are those? Jackets that are made out of the same material as like a FedEx envelope. Is it Tyvek or something? Tyvek?
Oh, yeah. I don't know. But
we need those.
I know what you're talking about.
Yeah. Print up some of those for our our A-plus listeners like that. And all right. Joe Zenkus didn't do anything on the last show. So we do have a Joe Zenkus update here in a little bit. I'm sorry. I'm going through the thingamadoodle here, the outline. We're trying to keep this nice and tight, so I'm going to keep repeating myself.
Tight and nice. Yeah. Go.
Do you want to talk about March Madness?
Yeah, just really quickly. So that was a lot of fun. We did the two brackets this year for the first time, and we, as a result, have two machines that are crowned winners. In the modern bracket, the final vote came down to AC/DC versus the Addams Family. I was kind of surprised that AC/DC got there. I thought it would take a couple of years before it really cemented itself as a challenger. But who do you think won that one?
I stopped following because I couldn't vote. And I'm surprised Addams Family made it that far. I thought it was on the same side of the bracket as Monster Bash and Lord of the Rings. And I thought one of them would make it to the top.
Yeah. I think we forget about Addams Family a lot.
Yeah. Out of those two, I would guess that Addams Family would be the winner.
It did. And get this, by one single vote. I opened up the last PM on Pinside, and I was like, all right, let's take a look at what's going on here. We've got a tie game, and it was the Addams Family. So it was crazy because it started off where it was just Addams Family killing AC/DC. I was like, oh, this is going to be a runaway. And then I had like 9 in a row for AC/DC, then 1 or 2 for Addams Family, then like 6 or 7 in a row for AC/DC. And then I kind of lost track on how many I was on each one, and then counted them all up before I checked the last vote to see if I even needed to count it. And I did, because that one had a tie. On the other side, however, there was a runaway winner, and that was between Taxi and Whirlwind. What's your guess there?
I'm guessing Whirlwind.
Wrong.
What?
Taxi. Taxi and a runaway.
This is BS. Jeff, you rigged the hell out of this one.
Hey, no. No, because I have an AC/DC and an Addams Family.
And you want a Taxi, and you never talk about Whirlwind.
I don't have to talk about it to love it. I've talked about trying to buy a Whirlwind from a really jerky seller, but no, yeah, Taxi's our winner of the first ever Classics division. So Taxi won that one fairly easily. The Addams Family won by one vote. Both will be retired into the Hall of Champions. And next year, AC/DC can take another shot at it. So,
well, great. It's nice to kind of get the big dogs out of the way. So next year will be Monster Bash, the one after that, Lord of the Rings. And then we can get into the nitty gritty.
Judge Dredd, NBA Fast Break. Yes,
Maverick will finally take it.
So I will announce the actual winners of the bracket challenge on our website. And they can be showered upon with rewards. So
cool.
Yeah, it was fun.
Whirlwind won my bracket, so I'm happy to see it made it so far. And Taxi's a fantastic game. So AC/DC is a fantastic game. It's hard when you get, there's just so many good pins. That's why people own 40, 50, 60 of them.
Yeah, I'll tell you, the votes that came in from Pinside, the younger voters, the ones that are younger in the hobby, I should say, because I don't know how old everyone is, sure. But the ones that have been registered less amount of time overwhelmingly supported AC/DC. The ones that had really long 5 years or
10 years
longer or whatever on Pinsec,
yeah,
they're very tilted towards Addams Family. So there's definitely a generational gap there between that.
It's
so.
Okay.
Yeah, it was kind of cool.
Takes all kinds. Well, thank you so much for doing your due diligence on that, Jeff. And thanks, everybody, for entering your brackets and for voting. And we have some great prizes. So as soon as we get that, all those votes tallied, it's a lot of work for Jeff. But once we do that, we'll put up a blog post and get the bragging rights out there.
Yep.
Cool. All right. And we'll see everybody in 11 months.
Yeah.
Yes. Do you want to talk about what you've been doing in pinball, or do you just want to skip it?
Mine's really quick. So I mentioned that I've got a pinball party coming up. That is next Saturday. So I've got a bunch of people coming over, and this is one of those husbands and wives and food and fun things. Most of these people are pretty casual players. So I've just kind of been getting things ready, shopping and doing some maintenance on the pins. I was hoping to get my gap filled with a purchase I was talking to you about, but it doesn't look like it'll be here in time either way. So I'll talk about that when it does happen.
Sure.
But I haven't had a chance to play any location stuff this week. We were camping last weekend and doing all sorts of other things, but
cool.
Yeah, I'm mostly just prepping my machines because everyone knows that right before people come over, that's when everything breaks down.
Mm-hmm.
And that happened on the last one. So
I'm not superstitious, but I do firmly believe in Murphy's Law.
Yeah.
And that's where it goes.
Yeah. And one thing actually is I mentioned I had the Twilight Zone reset issue.
Yeah.
And I've been putting off doing that fix because I've fixed reset issues with machines a lot. But a good reminder, and I believe PinWiki has a really good section on resets on those Williams boards, Bally and Williams resets issues for the WPC games. And I've got to go look. I think it was Pinside. I don't think it was RGP, but there was a thread where someone asked about, I think it was Twilight Zone specifically, about those reset issues. And some guys jump in and say, hey, before you just jump straight to replacing, the BR2 or whatever, before you jump in and replace that, go through and do all of the other possible fixes. And in the most cases, rather than replacing actual components, it's almost like a jiggle the cord situation. Like, oh, I had a cable that came loose, or I had a screw that wasn't screwed in all the way, or, you know, it's so many different little things that can cause resets that don't necessarily require taking boards out of the game or getting your soldering iron out. So just as a general tip, I would go back and look at that, and I will do the same before I sit down and really poke at it. I'll run through the steps before I pull my boards. So a lot of the times you never have to touch the board to fix a reset.
So that's your noob's corner tip?
Yeah, I've got a couple of special requests I didn't tell you, so they're not on the show schedule, but I'll work them in.
Okay. Check everything. Sounds like that's the first one. Yeah. Okay, we'll work them in a bit.
That's it for me.
Okay. I forgot to mention a couple things, like three or four things from Texas Pinball and stuff, but I forgot almost all of them. However, I did remember to mention I sold my Zeke's Peak.
Oh, no. Not to me, though.
Not to you. No. Which actually leads me into another rabbit hole I wanted to bring up. But anyway, I sold the Zeke's Peak because I bought an ice cold beer.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so that's okay, right?
That's fine. Do they have the same hole layout?
They do. I always thought it was different, but I had both of them in the house at the same time, and sure enough, it's exactly the same.
Are you better at one for some unexplained reason?
No, I'm awful at both.
That's good.
Actually, my Zeke's Peak actually felt better. Like, I had fixed up the joysticks and stuff. The switches were nice and reactive. So I need to do a little bit more of that to the ice cold beer. But the cabinet on the ice cold beer is in much better shape. The Zeke's Peak had a lot of water damage on the actual cabinet. So it played fine for the most part, but, you know, didn't look very good. And there's a lot more replacement parts for ice cold beer than there is for Zeke's.
Yes, yeah. Way easier to source that stuff.
Yeah. Actually, I already ordered a new bezel decal, and it came and everything, but it's not cut out. Like, none of the holes are cut or anything. So I don't know.
Weird.
Yeah. This is kind of odd. So, and I've never had to
take
deal with that.
Take a steady hand to it.
Yeah, I know. So I'm not a very crafty dude, but I'll have to figure that out. Anyway, I'm happy with it.
I believe.
If anybody's really good with those, on both games, there's always been, or I should say, Zeke's Peak I had for like 5 years or so, and the up kicker to get the ball into play after it goes underneath the bar, which doesn't happen that often, but it happens, I don't know, once every 10 plays or so. Anyway, whenever it gets under there, the up kicker would not kick it back up. It would lock on the coil, all kinds of stuff, always had issues. The ice cold beer has the same issues. It just, it's not happening. So I don't know what the deal is, but if anybody knows that game real well, please drop me a line so we can get it fixed. Very frustrating. I stuck a pinball plunger in there, and I would just flip it with my finger to knock the ball back into play. So I'm having to do that with my new game, too.
Huh. I hadn't heard of that, but must be an issue, I'm sure.
Yeah.
I've happened to both.
Yeah, the only two I've had. And, oh, well. Deal with it soon enough. And I put quite a few mods in games. I think I mentioned at Texas I bought a shaker motor and I stuck it in Tron. Yeah, I bought it from CoinTicker. They had a $99 show special, which is a great price on those. And
yeah,
it feels great. Very easy to install if you haven't done one before. I think Tron was the last game where the shaker motor holes were drilled. Or maybe it was the first game. I don't know. It was around that time where shaker motors were becoming a thing. I know in a Spider-Man, I had to drill holes to install a shaker motor.
Yeah, I had to drill for my Spider-Man.
I think Metallica might have had the holes there. I don't recall. Metallica Pro. But anyway, on this one, Tron already had the holes, so that saved me the time there. But it works great. And I also put in a lit shooter rod. Also bought it from CoinTaker. They gave me a great deal on that. And I got a blue. I didn't get a color changer or anything. I just got a nice blue one. And it's a little more complex than you'd think. On the sterns, you have to remove the two copper bushings on the plunger.
Yeah, I know what you're talking about.
So I thought it was one part, and I thought I'd have to drill it out. But no, there's two bushings. So I took a punch, and I knocked it out on both sides, yeah. Which wasn't a big deal. And then you put a plastic sleeve in there to replace it. And the actual shooter rod is still a little bit too big. So you kind of have to, you could, I guess, file it down. I used a turtle wax compound, and I stuck the shooter rod in my drill. And then I drilled it while my dad, or I spun it in the drill while my dad, rubbed the compound up and down the rod. And it was just took off a hair, but it was enough that the shooter rod works fine. But if you're real new, that's one of the reasons why he gave me a good deal on it, is because it's a larger rod if you're using them on the sterns. So it does take a little bit of know-how or work to get it in there. It's not as easy as a Williams, but not a huge deal.
All right. That's something I kind of considered, because it looks like it looked really cool on the Tron.
Yeah, I typically don't like them because they look kind of ugly when the game is off. It kind of looks like the color of Tron's costume in the original movie, that off-white color. Anyway, it looks fine. When the game's on, it's blue. When you pull the plunger back, it cuts the circuit and turns off until you let go of the plunger. So it's almost always on unless you're plunging. Either way, real cool. I put a picture up on Instagram. It's hard to get LEDs to work on there or whatever, but it looks fine. And pay attention to the order of the washers and everything. Because if you put the grounding strap in the wrong place, it won't light up. Which I did it wrong the first time, so I ended up having to move it. I don't really see what the difference is, but it needed to make contact with the plastic at some point. I don't know. Magnets, how do they work? I don't know. You know what I mean. I'm rambling. Okay, so what I want to talk about with the Zeke's Peak is something I've been meaning to ask you your opinion for a while, and I definitely want to hear from the listeners. How do you handle dibs on a game? You get a game, you have people over playing. Throughout the course of the life of the game, inevitably somebody says, hey, let me know when you're getting rid of this. How do you handle dibs? You just don't handle them and then put it up for sale? Or do you remember your buddies when, oh yeah, I want to buy your AC/DC. When it comes time to sell, what do you do?
It's pretty hard. Actually, with the last machine I sold, I had that situation where multiple people had asked about it. And kind of what I did is I let everybody know that I was thinking about it. And based on the, hey, I'm thinking about this, I'm not 100% sure yet, but I think I'm going to sell it. A couple of people who had previously said, oh, definitely let me know, they dropped out right away, so that helped. Then there was two who really still wanted it. And essentially I just said, if either of you guys really wants to come over and take one more look at it before I sell it, that's cool. And in my situation, I got lucky where one of the two guys came over.
Okay.
When I have multiple people who really want it, it's hard because you don't want to start a bidding war between your friends.
Sure.
I don't know. That's kind of tough. So I try and feel out who's the more motivated buyer there. I don't want to hurt anybody's feelings, but I don't know. Dibs are kind of a, a tough deal, because if you forget about it completely, then they're kind of bummed out. If you remember everybody, then you risk putting people at odds. It's hard to handle, but I just kind of started the whittling down process early by, hey, I'm thinking about it, and then when I got serious, made the final invitation.
Yeah.
And that helped, but.
Over the years, I probably had 15 people put dibs on Zeke's Peak. And one of the guys, as far as I know, the first guy, but definitely one of the guys that wanted it, I actually kind of sniped the ice cold beer from him. I didn't mean to, but that's how it worked out. And so I gave him first crack on the Zeke's Peak because he didn't get the ice cold beer. And I knew he was near the top of the list, if not at the top of the list. But he had just gone through some really touchy moments when he was parting his collection out. And I think what I'm going to do is just put it right on a post-it note and keep it inside the coin box or whatever, inside the coin door. It's up to the owner to be responsible enough to do that, to update the list or whatever. But ultimately, it'll be a smoother transition through your friends if you say, hey, man, I got my list, and boom, Measles at the top of it. So it's his game if and when I choose to sell. If he doesn't want it, then you go to the next one or whatever.
And you just remind me, I did that with an arcade machine when I when I was getting rid of my Tron. I kind of wish I had that still. But that was a thing where I had three or four people that said, oh, yeah, 100% sure, let me know. And I let them all know kind of in the order that they asked. And I swept through the list, and none of them were ready to buy that time. And that's where I traded it for the Jackbot. But before I made the offer on the Jackbot, I ran through my list. So
cool. That worked. Another easy one is to just say nobody has dibs. And if you have a community forum, you post it, and first come, first serve or whatever. Yeah. But then I think that would, in our community, it's small enough that would kind of hurt feelings, I think.
Yeah, it can. So,
oh, well, one of those things. I want to give another plug for the Forum Use It Only podcast that Nicholas Baldridge does. I listened to another 45 or 50 episodes yesterday, and more good information. So he's still cranking them out. I think he's closing in on episode 30 already in a month. So anyway, pretty sweet. And I've got a lot of good feedback from our listeners, people that enjoy the show or glad they glad they heard about it. So
yeah, he's doing a good job.
I still haven't found that Coinbox podcast. I've been checking iTunes, and if it's not on iTunes, it's kind of dead to me. So I'm going to have to figure that out.
It's up on Stitcher, and the thing is they've been waiting for their approval on iTunes.
Okay.
And as of yesterday, I think they were still waiting on it.
So soon it'll be up.
If they listen, though, I think they may have an issue with their submission, because whenever I've submitted, I'm usually 24 hours and I have iTunes listings. So
this is, I think, the fifth podcast I've done, and the other ones are up in 24 hours. But I think Nicholas Baldridge was one of them where he said, okay, I submitted it, and his I was checking and checking because we talk somewhat frequently. And it was several days, so maybe they've changed their policy. I haven't submitted a podcast in 2 years or so I don't know. Anyways, who knows? Apple, right?
Well, the one my Gamer Theory podcast, that was about 6 months ago. It was still one day, but it might vary. Like, depending on what category you put it into, they may have bigger review teams, smaller review teams. You never know.
Are you still doing Gamer Theory? I liked it before the hiatus, but I haven't heard it since you've been back.
It's going to be back officially very soon. Okay. We did a kind of a test.
Okay, cool.
Coming back episode, and it's going to be back very soon.
Cool. All right. We'll look forward to that.
Yeah.
And I checked out Lock When Lit podcast, and it looks like they haven't updated since December. And I haven't heard that last episode, so I don't know if one of them dropped off or what.
Yeah, I'm not sure. It's hard. It's hard to keep going.
Yeah. Yeah. Sometimes I wonder why we bother, but it's all right.
We are punishing ourselves. Flagellation.
Wow, Hangouts just freaked out and it scared me. And also, I was talking to Matt Hansen a little bit, and he asked for recommendations for an iOS league software, to run like tournaments and whatnot.
Like a Bracalope?
Like a Bracalope, yeah. That's the one I suggested, because I know Taylor Reese uses it, And yeah. I messed with it a little bit, but it wasn't exactly what I needed, or maybe I wasn't ready for it. But he found one called Match Play, and it's not iOS specific. It runs through a website, and you have to, it's in beta. So I just submitted to be able to use it. So I have not tried it yet, but it's built for pinball, and it has live updating. So everybody can just check on their phones as the tournament's running, which is pretty cool. So I'll be keeping an eye on that. But if anybody has any pinball scoring software that they recommend for, I guess, iOS or Android, any mobile software, let us know, and let us know why you recommend it. And I'll pass that along too. So, yeah. There you go. And I wanted to mention a couple things we effed up. One of them, the last episode, we were talking about kind of sketchy pinball stories. We pick, you know, you pick up a game at a rough location. And yeah. I mentioned that somebody had some good stories, and I was working on Tron, and I remembered it was Sparky from, you know, Sparky Pinball, Mark.
Yeah.
It was him on his episode of One and Done, which I think was episode 1 or 2. So he told 3 stories in 1 episode. That's why I was thinking it was a couple episodes. But I just wanted to give him a plug there. And I
need to go check that out. I have gaps in my One and Done listenership, so I need to do
One and Done is great. I never get tired of it. I heard Sparky did one. He did another one recently. I think he might even be the newest one. But Tommy ended up doing one about the Texas Pinball Festival. I don't remember if I mentioned it on the last show because I was kind of nagging him about it. But both of them are up, so you can check that out. And Taylor Reese did a couple episodes. The guy that owns, what is it, Cactus Jacks? I know he did one. You just get a lot of variety there, so it's pretty cool.
Sisterhood of the Traveling Podcast.
Yes. The one that Sparky just did is very Creature from the Black Lagoon heavy. So if you like that game, you want to hear more about it, check that out.
One of my favorites.
Yeah, there you go. He tells his history of the game, which is kind of cool. So anyway. Oh, and World Cup Soccer. We did like 4 or 5 episodes ago. We reviewed World Cup Soccer, and we forgot to mention our scores, and I forgot it again on the last episode. So we both, we plugged them in, we averaged them out, and it ended up with a 7.8105 ranking, which puts
That's good.
Yeah, 7.8 is pretty high. It puts it at number 13, no, 14. Number 14. So it bumps Medusa, and it's right above Whitewater.
You mean right below Whitewater?
Right below it, yeah, you're right. Okay. Right above Medusa. So I'll plug that in. And we remembered to do it for our featured machine on this episode, so we'll talk about that when the time is right. Hopefully, we remember to anyway. Cool. So, we have up. We got some feedback from Joe Zankus. Show feedback from our last episode. He said, Big Lebowski, he hasn't gotten enough time on it. He really should play it next time he's over at Pinball Life, which he's in that same area, so he's lucky that he can do that. Just pop over. He said it's visually stunning, but without complete code, it's hard to say how good it will play. The ramps and features seem to be on par with any late 90s Williams title. Yeah, I'd agree. They're not super weird, vertical, Gottlieb ramps or anything, and that's kind of a good comparison. It does feel like a late 90s Williams game, but with a much different theme than you'd expect. Obviously, with Hobbit, he hates the theme. If it weren't for the fact that Stern Lord of the Rings actually has a nice layout, he wouldn't even consider playing it. The Hobbit was set up very floaty at Chicago Expo too. Not sure why they're being so conservative. If they're worried about damage, they have the ability to tone the coils down. So yeah, he said, way to sell your game by making it play like an EM. And I said something very similar. It was set up in such a way that it was not fun for me to play. So it was very hard to give a formed opinion, and it just left a bad taste in my mouth, basically. It sounds like he's in the same boat.
Yeah, and I think we mentioned this last time that Wizard of Oz was similar. And also, Wizard of Oz was like, it was slow, but at the same time, it had like 7-second ball times because it tilted so easy, too, when it was first shown.
Yeah, and another thing with Wizard of Oz is there's not like a giant empty middle play field like there is on Hobbit. So right. Slow doesn't mean as much because you're hitting close targets. When you're shooting to the back of the play field like that, it just feels different. When it takes that long for your ball to get down and touch anything, you notice it more, I guess. It's kind of like if you wait in line at McDonald's for 1 minute, it feels like too long. You know what I mean?
Yes. So.
America's Most Haunted. I did not know this, but he actually pre-ordered it 2 months ago after hearing Nate over on Coast to Coast praise it. He said it played and looked pretty good at Expo, new codes, and lights flashing more. It looks even better. I'm glad it sold out for three reasons. Number one, it means Charlie will be announcing Title 2 soon. I thought actually he would have done it already, so I don't know what I'm missing.
I don't know. He may, if it's, we know it's licensed, so it may be a timing with the licensor.
Sounds like it.
But I'm glad that you mentioned that because he's completely sold out of the last one, mm-hmm. and that's, I think, of all the boutique pinball makers that we've seen, the biggest success story that we've also seen. People have compared it to like the Big Bang Bar Project from Illinois Pinball, and I agree that was a crazy awesome thing, but that was a pre-designed game, you know? Yeah. This was a scratch project.
Yeah, totally.
He committed to a number to build. He sold all of them, and people are getting their machines. Not as fast as like a Stern gets them out, but I don't think anybody expects that. He hasn't set that expectation up. He's hiring more people, though, and it's usually about, he said, about 90 days for people to get their game, which is not bad at all.
No, it's
so fun. Just awesome. I'm super proud of him. I think it's a really cool story, and I hope Game 2 is even better.
Yeah, and KT just left her job at the bank, and she's on board full-time with Spooky Pinball. They've just been such a success story, and everybody loves them. Nobody has anything bad to say about them because they're just good people making honest decisions. And Jersey Jack, I don't know if you want to call him boutique anymore because they're kind of big, but of anybody, you're right, he is a boutique player, but even ahead of Jersey Jack, he basically announced the game and came to completion faster than anybody. I mean, came to shipping in a shorter period of time, like a year and a half or something total.
Yeah. And people are universally happy with this thing.
Yeah, everybody loves it. And he's just amazing. He's gold cup over there. Doing a fantastic job.
Yeah.
All right, his number two reason, he's glad it sold out. It means Charlie will be hiring more people to bump up production, which means he gets his number sooner, which is happening. And number three, it means suddenly I own a pinball that only 149 other people can claim they own, less than the number of Big Bang bars. So what that means is it should hold its value if he decides to get rid of it or even go up. If you even want to get rid of it because it plays so fun. So it's nice. People go, oh, well, I don't want to spend this much money on a game. But the retail value is there, or the resale value. On any game you buy, any pin, there's some resale value, whereas a video game, we've mentioned before, crashes and burns, a car, you know, in most cases drops significantly. Pinball machines are not that bad. On Cheap Ass Gamer, they were talking about buying a Bubble Check, or what is a Bubble Check hockey?
Yeah, Bubble Check.
Yeah, Bubble Check's hockey game, and they're like $3,000, and they're like, oh, I don't know if I can spend $3,000 on that. But they never brought up that it would be worth, let's say, $2,000 when they're done.
You know,
it would maintain some value.
Yeah, they don't devalue like video games do.
Yeah, like a lot of things. So, Joe also says, based on the song that Charlie played during his last podcast, I'm pretty sure he's retheming his next project to Lollipop Chainsaw. It's not...
if he did... I would be super interested in that because I actually really like that game.
Dude, I love Suda, and that'd be awesome. It's not far from his original theme. The license is probably cheap. You still get the TNA, and it ties right into his love for cosplay. He pushes every year for Midwest Gaming Classic. And if he's right, that would be fantastic. Joe pulled that out of his ass. I did not hear what song he played, so I don't know how it tied into Lollipop Chainsaw. But anything Suda does, I'll buy right away. And I own it. That was a great game.
Yeah. A lot of funny sound drops if if that was to happen.
Big, dumb fun right there.
Yeah.
So, cool. Thanks, Joe. We always appreciate your input. At Pyro Podcast wrote on Twitter that he has a Metallica, and he asks, is it difficult / worth it to upgrade the speakers? I actually upgraded the speakers in my game, and I think it was worth it. What was it, like $150, I think, for the Flipper Fidelity kit?
I think it's worth it cost-wise for sure. as far as ease of installation, super easy. It's 10, 15 minutes and you're done. And I did it on Tron first. That's the first game I ever did it on. And when you're starting that light cycle multi-ball, the first time after you've put the upgraded sub in it, it's the coolest sound. That big bass drop it does.
Yeah.
It's just like, okay, well, that was worth the money. I mean, if it's going to vary by game, but Metallica is one that definitely makes it worth it.
Metallica, the only issues I ran into were you have to put in like a mounting bracket for the subwoofer in the bottom of the cab, and mine was kind of difficult to position. Once I got it in, my game is a pro, so it didn't come with the slide rails, and I had already installed those like a year and a half before I got the speakers. And since there's no markings on it, they didn't pre-drill the play field. I just had to freeball it, basically. And I had installed the right slide rail just a hair too far to the center. So when I put the game down, it lands right on top of the speaker. The slide rail does. So I have to put my hand in and kind of bend it out of the way to put it down. I need to just move it, but then I'm putting more holes in the bottom of the playfield, which isn't a great thing either. So if you have a chance to do one before the other, obviously put in the speaker first, or pay attention when you're putting in the slide rails and give it enough room. Mine looks great until I got the subwoofer in. I was like, oh, crap. Another thing was I had lit speakers on the speaker panel. And so figuring out how to fit those in with the new speakers was a little more difficult. I had to use longer screws because you're adding a half inch gap with the LED lighting. Does that make sense?
Yeah, yeah.
It's like more crap to fit in there. I ended up leaving the speaker grills out, and I had bought these Metallica cymbals. They were just die cut, and I stuck them in front of them. So it looks really cool. It looks more raw. I could post a picture. I still really want to go through Metallica and make an article of all the crap I've thrown on that game. But yeah, definitely worth it. They sound great. The Stern factory speakers on everything but AC/DC are garbage, so. Could be a lot worse, but, I mean, they get the job done, but, yeah, they could be a lot better. And any new chance a new Kiss machine appears, we know that Stern has licensed Kiss, so it's coming eventually. And that leaked, like, a year ago.
Yeah, that's been a pretty long one. Yeah.
So it would be no surprise if a new Kiss game appeared. Which would be nice, because, it's been 35 years, 40 years almost. Since the last one. Wow, Kiss has been around forever. Crazy. Okay. John Costin wrote in, what's the best way around Williams Bally Midway copyright issues? I know others have a rights compensation, but it seems whenever someone comes up with something, it infringes in some way. The latest issues with the pin soundboard, since Planetary gave a no-go on posting sounds on the forums that belong to those games. Like, you can't, like, basically they're shutting down anybody posting copyrighted music, which I guess makes sense. It's unfortunate because so much has been floating around for so long and now the hammer's come down.
Yeah, in that specific instance, it's really hard because people posting those sounds aren't making any money on it.
Right, they're just sharing.
They're sharing it. So it's tough because, like, if Planetary wants their cut, and their cut is actually not that bad. To license something, they usually take a flat rate per item. For a lot of things, it's like $25 flat. So if you're doing a playfield of that playfield solid, you give them $25, they're cool. Obviously, for a sound file, you can't charge $25 for it. So I would think the way to get around it, so to speak, would be to create some sort of website or community. Maybe it's ad supported, work out a deal with Planetary to where it's like, hey, we want to be able to share these sound files. We're not going to sell them, but we're willing to pay like a yearly licensing fee to make these available. And then the site can run off donations and ad support. That's one way I could see it. But as far as outright just sharing through the forums or whatever, you're always going to run into opposition on that. I don't know of a way to skirt it. I think the only way to do it is to find a way to legitimately work with them.
Something similar is what they do in churches. I can't think of the company, but basically when you play a worship song and they'll put up the lyrics so people can sing along, and they pay a flat. The church pays a flat fee to license the public viewing of those lyrics. And they all go through the same company. You'll see the little copyright at the bottom of all those lyric sheets, or you should if they're doing it lawfully correct. It's really common. They've done it for at least 20 years. I don't even know how long. Doing something similar would be nice. I can see they want to cut. I can see if you're printing decals with Rudy's face on them, that somebody should get a cut for that. Yeah, it is hard with sounds. If they sold a CD or even, you know, a use package, okay, well, Jeff wants to distribute this. Here's a $20 package. He can change it as much as he wants for Funhouse. Hopefully it's not that much, but yeah, building a community is more than I think they would do, but that would be a nice way to go about it. I don't know. Maybe there's no easy answer. I don't know.
Yeah, it's finding some way to work with them, because obviously there's a benefit to the community that can be had there, but they're just not worth selling for any sort of amount that would appease, you know, license holders. So I think you need to start that conversation, say, hey, what would it take? And then find out if that's feasible and if the community can support that.
How does it work with, like, Future Pinball? Are they dropping the hammer on that and Visual Pinball? Same kind of thing.
I don't know. I'm not sure.
I'm not sure either.
That one's so squirrely, though, because you can never pin down exact sources to go after. Once it gets out there, it's just out and it's everywhere.
Yeah, but this could be kind of the same thing. Once that pin sound file's out there, you email it to your friends or whatever, you download it and you have it forever. It's a similar type of product. I mean, I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know. If anyone knows, that'd be cool to know.
Yeah. Please let us know. I told him straight up, I didn't really know what he was getting at, and he gave me a little more information, but there's folks out there way more into it than us. Love to know. And Nicholas Baldridge wrote in, he wants to know our top five bingos. Too bad.
I don't have an answer.
No, great topic for his podcast. The For Amusement Only podcast. He also asked, okay, top five games you enjoy playing on location. That'd be a good top five. Maybe we'll do that on the next episode. We've been feeling uninspired with our top fives lately.
Yeah.
Honestly. We have a long list, but it's like, you know, top five ramp shots. All right, well, that's a heady topic there. Unless the ramp does something odd.
What's that? You cut out for
unless a second. The ramp does something unusual, you know, if it's a ramp that drops away or something, you know, a jump ramp like No Fear.
Creature from the Black Lagoon can direct into the little whirlpool for building up.
Yeah. Mustang similar. I don't know. Okay, we'll throw that in our top five hole and maybe it'll pop up soon. All right, you want to go ahead with news? Are you good?
I am great.
We're at 43 minutes. I think we're doing okay. Yeah. So Bare Naked Ladies released a new album, which allegedly, I've made jokes that, Bare Naked Ladies are suddenly everybody's favorite band because Ed Robertson's a pinball guy. Nothing against Bare Naked Ladies. Just, I don't know. Maybe it's kind of cool that the community is supporting one of their own. But anyway, their new album, the reason I'm bringing it up right now is it's called Silver Ball. And the cover is a big picture of a pinball. And Silver Ball is the name of a song on the album. It comes out June 2nd. So here, this might be that new pinball anthem I've been complaining about for years.
Yeah. It would be awesome if it was a suitable anthem. But it's a true arena rock anthem that makes pinball the coolest sounding thing ever.
Right.
Yeah, that would be awesome.
So is it weird to be in a band where the lead singer's his hobby becomes the title of your next album? Like, how does the drummer feel about that? Not up to him?
No one cares how the drummer feels.
No one cares. Like, what if the drummer's super into needlepoint and he's like, okay, well, you did your pinball album. Now our next album is Cross Stitch or something.
I don't know, but needlepoint's a pretty rad name for an album.
Well, fair enough. I always think that's odd. I guess the front man's a front man for a reason, though. The rest of the band just goes with it.
Yeah, yes.
I also wanted to congratulate Game Room Junkies for their 50th episode.
Yeah, it was a good episode.
Yeah, it was a great episode. They started, I think, just before we did. But then we started...
A while before we did.
Yeah, well, I think it might have been the same year. But they started going... We started going two episodes a month, so...
That's how we reached it first.
But, yeah, they hit 50. Congratulations, guys. It's a great show. They kind of refocused the show. They're going to include lots of different game room news, but also console news. Like they talk about Mortal Kombat X on the new episode.
Yeah, yeah. And they've got Brian, special guest Brian, whose job is to manage a game store. So he came in with his expertise.
Talked about consoles and whatnot. Yeah, it's good. It's different. It wasn't what I expected. And they might have broadened their audience quite a bit. They also signed up with Geek Dad. They're part of that network, which is really cool. And they also, we were nagging Preston for a while to make a print of his Pinbot minimalist art or whatever, which I'd still love for him to make a print, but he didn't. He made a t-shirt instead. And he did it on Teespring, where you had to have 40 sales before they would print the shirt. And he made it. They're at 50 right now. Yep. So it's a really cool shirt.
I got one.
I got one too. It's just an awesome design. All it is basically an interpretation of the five drop targets, or the five target bank that drops in Pinbot. I'll put up a link, but it's on teespring.com and you can order it through Thursday. So I'm not sure when this show will go up. It usually goes up Tuesday or Wednesday. So I'm guessing you'll be able to find it somewhere after that Thursday cutoff. But if you hear it right now, go run, check out the link and get one ordered. I think there's $17. Yeah.
Yeah, they're pretty reasonable. It's between 17 and 20,
yeah,
I think.
Yeah, it was right around there. So, awesome. Thank you guys for doing that. Another thing is in the mail the other day, I got a subscription card for Game Room Magazine.
Yeah, it's coming back.
Coming back, and snail mail is what broke the news to me. I was all excited. I ran in the house and got online right away and resubscribed. So you can go to thepinballcompany.com/subscribe.aspx, whatever that is. Anyway, I'll put a link in the thing. But yeah, Game Room was an awesome magazine that went out of business 5 years ago. I can't believe it has been that long.
I know. And you know, every once in a while, I will pull a random issue and read it. There's some really good articles.
They totally hold up. I do the same thing. Yeah. I kept all my issues and yeah, they're great.
Yeah, I have a ton of issues.
Rob Craig, like that's how I became like a Rob Craig fan, is he wrote...
Yeah, Tales of the Silver Ball.
Yeah, he wrote an article in there.
If you notice in his main header image at the top, there's a credit dot showing.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Happens to all of us.
Yeah. Maybe you mentioned that on an early episode or something.
I think I did. I
remember that coming up. And on a similar note, Preston from Game Room Junkies, he's actually a reporter, journalist?
Contributor
to a lot of different publications, notably Pace magazine. But I was reading Retro Game magazine, and he had an article in there about B-list pinball machines, basically, or like best deals in pinball. And I'm not going to tell you what his number one game is, because it's on my short list of games I want, and I want all even more people looking at it. I sent him an angry email telling him to shut the hell up about it. I don't want to drive the price up. But, yeah, his articles are
a lot of
fun.
Watch your back, Preston.
Yeah, Preston. I know where you live. I don't know where he lives, but I know he'll be at the Southern Fried Gamer Expo.
Yeah, we know roughly the region in which he resides.
The state, that's right. And also, on a depressing note, those guys run the Southern Fried Gamer Expo. Charlie from the Spooky Pinball Podcast owns a pinball company now. Nate's, like, whining and dining pinball celebrities around the world. What the hell are we doing, Jeff?
Talking about what he talks about with people.
Well, we should hang it up. We should seriously start talking about that more. Stop wasting everyone's time. There's enough options. A friend asked me tonight that I hadn't seen in a while if I was still doing the podcast, and he's not a pinball guy, but he listened to an old episode, and he said that it was hard to follow because he's not in the hobby, and he asked if we had thought about making it easier to get into or making a show for new people. I was like, well, we did a episode for new people, but we're kind of like, I guess we're like the collector type podcast. There's a player podcast. There's a, you know, game room podcast. There's an interviews podcast. Then there's us.
Yeah, we're kind of the grumpy old man
side
of it.
I don't know what we are. We're just here. That's all right.
Yeah.
One of the things people really like about the show that we did not do last episode is our feature machine.
Yeah, that's true. We totally let everybody down deeply.
Yeah. Well, I'm glad you guys like it. And I actually, not that we're going to refocus the show, but if there's stuff you like or don't like, we're always open to suggestions. We'd love to hear your feedback. So pinballpodcast@gmail.com. If there's an aspect of the show you love, we'll get on it. I know a lot of people hate our audio quality and let us know, so I appreciate that. We've been not working diligently to fix that for years.
No, I think we actually sound pretty good.
Yeah, though. Yeah, we've come a long way. Yeah. Now that I said that, it'll be jinxed this episode. But... No, perfect. All right, Jeff, what machine are we doing this month?
We are doing the Untouchable... Unmatched Baywatch.
Fantastic. A surprise to no one that this game was made.
This one?
Yeah.
Well, given the fact of who made it, I would guess it came out later than the show's
peak
popularity spike.
At one point, Baywatch was the most viewed show in the world.
Thank you, Germany.
Yes. So does everybody says that, but is Germany that populated?
There's plenty of them to drive up a show's number. There's got to be at least a few thousand of them, right? Yeah,
at least double digits.
Yeah.
So Baywatch,
but
oddball theme, but it makes sense. It's got a wide appeal. It's got at least two reasons why people watch it. So.
Exactly. Yeah. It wasn't like an awesome yet underappreciated in its time show like, say, Firefly. This was huge. It was everywhere.
Ooh, Firefly. Don't talk about Firefly pins.
Sorry. Ooh,
getting faint.
Maybe if they had Nicole Eggert and David Hasselhoff on it in the crew.
Yancey Butler, was she on it?
I don't know.
All right, yeah, Baywatch, made by Sega Pinball, February 95. It is a six-player game, which is very unusual, but yeah, you can play it to six players, which is awesome. I don't understand why every game doesn't have that, but they don't. Baywatch is one of the few.
Yeah, Baywatch was a true pioneer.
It kind of was in a lot of ways. It had a lot going on. It's a wide body. It's got that giant, beautiful DMD. Only four games.
It's got a shark flipper.
Yeah, it's got
shark fin flipper.
It's got three normal flippers and a shark flipper. And it's game controlled like Fang from Adam's Family. Very cool. Yeah. That's the one thing. The first time I played it was Expo in 2010. And the only thing I remember about it for a couple of years was that it had a shark flipper or shark fin flipper. You know,
yeah, that's kind of, it's pretty memorable little detail.
Sure, yeah.
When you see it. It's got those bright gold brassy ramps.
Mm-hmm. The big guard tower in the back there. It just, there's a lot of shots. There's a lot of stuff going on in here.
There are a ton of shots on this game. It's like, well, it makes sense, but it's like a 90s Wizard of Oz. It's just, yeah. There's so many shots.
Yeah. Excuse me.
Which is interesting because who designed this one, Don?
It was designed by Joe Kamiko and Joe Balser, who also designed Wizard of Oz.
Yeah. So
and South Park. That, sorry.
Definitely a poor man's Wizard of Oz thing going on here with how many crazy features and shots there are on it. I mean, there are just shots after shots. It's got a good big five-ball multi-ball. So this is a game that's definitely, you can never accuse it of being boring or understimulating. Like, unless you're just really bad at pinball and I don't think there's probably only one or two posts you can hit that don't even have a stand-up on it. So you're constantly making progress towards something on it. So it does a really good job at kind of satisfying people of all skills. If you're really good and you can hit, like, that guard shot's not the easiest shot. And some of the other shots are kind of difficult. You can do a good job of hitting those. It's really satisfying for that player. But if you're really bad at pinball, at least you can get things started. You can look at David's dreamy eyes on the play field, dead center, as well as on the back glass. Everything you need.
Beautiful man.
Yeah, I'm actually surprised. Now, maybe not all that surprised since it is pinball, but I'm surprised that Pamela Anderson's more prominent on the back glass than David Hasselhoff.
Yeah, what's up with that, Jeff? Is that your call?
Men.
Yeah.
Men made that call, especially when given the cabinet art. But
the cabinet art is very,
Cheeky.
It's cheeky. It puts Wonelli, makes it look like a nun, but that's all right.
Yeah. But but just like back to the shots and features, it's just they're stacked on this game. It's surprising. You would walk up to it and you'd expect it to be I don't want to say phoned in, but almost kind of, right? Like you think, oh, it's a Sega, oh, it's
a rethemed with a cheesy weapon.
Yeah, it's you'd kind of think that, but no, it's got up kickers and crazy sorts of multi-ball shark flippers and a giant DMD. It's got an auto plunger. It's spinners and scoops.
It's got three ramps, I think.
Yeah, I think three ramp shots. That's right.
Crazy. Video modes actually are pretty awesome. Well, I mean, awesome looking. There's just a level of detail in everything, even the video transferred animations that aren't there in the smaller DMDs. I don't know why that didn't become a standard, too.
I don't know. I so wish it would have. Yeah.
They went out of their way to design it and build it.
I'm just guessing that since it was only one company doing it, it's just nobody else wanted to retool.
Yeah, but it is the one company that survived. Like, why didn't Stern just keep going?
Oh, that's true, I guess. Yeah, I don't know.
That'd be the standard now. I mean, I guess the standard's changed into LEDs. LED monitors, but
yeah,
whatever.
Yeah, I guess so.
So let's let me pull up a better playfield shot and we'll go over it.
Okay.
More piece by piece here. I love any game with Sonic the Hedgehog on it. It's okay with me. He's right there on the flippers and on the DMD.
Yeah.
One of the best Sonic games ever.
Sonic the Hedgehog 1 and 2 were pretty good.
The best post-Genesis Sonic game? Well, yeah, Sonic definitely. CD,
I mean,
I
Sonic,
guess.
Sonic 3D. Through CD. Yeah. I mean, yeah. But then they all kind of turn into not great.
Yeah. We should do a whole podcast just on Sonic the Hedgehog. No?
I think we should.
How's there no Sonic Spinball? Except for the... Sonic Spinball. We could talk about that. Skip B's the only one who actually made a Sonic pin. What's up with that?
I don't know.
Hmm.
Missed opportunity.
Yeah. So, one thing they did different on this is it doesn't have side rails. It uses like a metal kind of like wraparound. So the playfield's actually even a little bit bigger than like a Williams super pin, which is kind of cool, but it doesn't feel too big. I mean, like Wizard of Oz is another game where I personally don't think it feels too big. This one doesn't. The flippers are strong enough to hit all the shots. Having four flippers is nice. The shark flipper doesn't do a whole lot, but when you nail that scoop across the playfield, and it's not that hard to do, but it still feels good.
Yeah, I agree. Like a lot of times, machines this wide, it feels like there's a ton of slow rolling stuff in the middle, especially when you're shooting for side to side shots. And for some reason, it just doesn't seem to get hung up on that stuff very much.
No, same with Batman Forever, another wide body Sega. Yeah. It just feels good. They were doing something
blast
right.
Blast processing.
It's got the blast processing. Actually, it looks like it has four ramps. Because
we shorted a ramp.
Four
forgot
ramps.
About the cross ramp. Yeah.
No, I remember the cross ramp. I forgot the Venice Beach one or whatever.
The little one between next to the guard tower. Yeah.
It's got a really cool physical ball lock up in the guard tower. Up kickers all over the place. It has three different skill shots. And it depends on when you, if I remember right, I don't think you select it with the flippers. I think it scrolls through. I always do the top lanes because it's pretty easy. It doesn't always go into the same lane, but it's an easy 10 million points. Or maybe it's 30 million each time. The scoring on this game is very high. It's a lot of points. Yeah, it's enough to make a big dent if you're playing it in League. That was one of my strategies, which is, boom, I'm just going to keep stacking that easy skill shot. Another one is it.
Congratulations on the only League that plays Baywatch.
You can thank Cameron, who's been on the show before. He bought a Baywatch. He bought the one from Rocky Mountain. That's awesome. Yeah.
I know. I played it a ton, too. The right flipper couldn't quite make that lock shot very well, but once in a while it could, and it was still fun.
He fixed it all up.
A good game there.
He LED'd it out, and it looked gorgeous. He actually put in the awesome. Lord of the Rings flipper coils.
Oh, so it probably screams.
It does, but we broke a plastic in League.
Oh.
Yeah. So I don't know how readily available parts are for this one either.
Jeez, I doubt it could be super plentiful.
Another skill shot, it would feed the shark flipper, and you get a little bit more points. And again, that's not a very hard shot to hit, but you don't want to risk it. Or at least I didn't in League. The actual playfield art is pretty cool. I don't know, kind of generic.
Comic style.
Yeah, it's comic style. It's yellows and like baby blues, which is unique for pinball, but it totally fits the theme. It's got a lot of inserts, but not too gross.
Yeah, I was going to say a lot of inserts. I love the inserts centered around the shark stuff. They're shaped like a shark fin.
Yeah.
And then they have one that's like a shark's open mouth. So that's kind
of
cool.
Yeah, I love those little, I'm a sucker for a ton of little drop targets or stand-up targets in a row like that. The whole shark thing, there's boom, five of them side by side. But they're curved so that you have more of a chance of hitting each one, I guess.
It's
not just it's flopping around.
Apparently, Baywatch, they deal with a lot of high waves and sharks.
High waves? Oh, because of what's on there?
Yeah. High surf.
You're collecting characters from the show in one of the modes, and there's inserts with their names on them, of which I don't know if I could name any of them. Sydney, I think, might have been.
I never watched the show, despite being at the absolute perfect age.
Yeah, dude, you were what, 14 when this came out?
Well, I was born in 81. So the show started in 90. Oh, did it start in the...
So you were 13 when this was
released. It started in 89.
Released. Not quite 14.
So the show started late 80s. Yeah. So I was a little young then. But it ran until, I was a teenager. But a quick look to ye olde IMDb. Let's see. Pamela Anderson was CJ Parker. She was on the show from 92 to 97. So I would have been 11 till 16. So that would have been
perfect.
The right time for me. See. Another longtime runner, Stephanie was the character's name. She was Alexandra Paul.
Oh, yeah.
Yasmin Bleeth. She was Caroline. She's one of the collectible characters on the game. April was Kelly Packard. She was on the show from 91 to 99, so till I was a senior in high school. Brooke Burns from 98 to 2001. See, like...
Riveting.
This should have been, like, my time. I never jumped on the...
When did the show go off the air? When did Baywatch Nights take it off the air?
Well, I don't know. I think it was 2001 2001. So I don't know about Baywatch Nights. Let me take a look at that.
Wait, somebody needs to
Baywatch Nights started up in 95.
Somebody needs to get on the home ROM and add a Baywatch Nights mode to this. Instead of midnight multiball, you'll have a Baywatch Nights boom when 12 o'clock rolls around.
Yeah, Baywatch Nights only ran from 95 to 97, but Baywatch ran from 89 to 2001.
Wow, 2001, I can't believe it.
So I was 8 years old when it started, and it ended when I was 20. That's crazy.
Wow, yeah. And you never watched it? There's a lot of good episodes about kids getting caught in caves, and pretty much that's it. That's every episode.
Oh, yeah, Carmen Electra was on it for a couple of years.
Wow, that must have been late. Late in the game.
She was 97 to 98, so.
Nobody put up a scoring strategy manual on here.
I don't know on this. That's one I actually do not know good scoring strategy for it. I just get to multi-ball, hit lots of ramps. That's my general strategy for anything that I don't know well, but I don't know the finer points.
The DMD is actually pretty good about giving you information. And if I remember right, the callouts also give you enough information to keep going. There was a, that like underwater diver mode. It looks like it should be a video mode because it's a diver going. And if I remember right, there was a video mode for that.
Didn't it have something like sharks and...
No, it doesn't have one like Black Rose does. I don't think it has one where you're running from them. Is that what you mean?
I can't remember it. No, I thought it was more like... No, I don't remember. I'm confusing it with something else.
Another cool option, it comes with a tournament mode button installed, which this might have been the first game to do that.
One of the first. Yeah.
All right, vertical mode. I'm reading in the manual, they put like a sample game manual on here. Chopper rescue. CPR mode. I'm up to mode 11 so far. Diver trapped mode. Shark attack. Tidal wave. Guard mode. Tourist season.
I don't think it had a video mode.
Oh, it has at least the jet ski one.
Yeah, the jet ski one I remember. But.
I could have sworn it had more than one video mode. I feel like we're dropping the ball here. I blame Jeff. Video mode not finalized. There are four video modes. One is lit by spelling rescue on the side ramp. One is lit by the first mystery feature. One is lit by the mystery award. They hadn't been fleshed out by the time the manual was written. Well, I know for sure if there's still four, I haven't played them all. This is one I was a little nervous about doing because I haven't spent that much time with it, but I do like it a lot. That sounded convincing, right?
I've only seen the jet ski one.
Yeah, jet ski one. They must play in order, maybe? Or that's the easiest one to get, obviously.
I don't know.
Wow, we should have brought Cameron on. Our whole next episode is going to be a UF'd up Baywatch episode.
Anything to be able to revisit Baywatch. I'm cool. Jenny McCarthy was on two episodes. Elizabeth Berkeley was on a couple of episodes. Danny Trejo,
all right.
If you go to IMDb, not IPDB, go to Full Cast and Crew and just blow your mind of how many one-off, two-off, or three-off episode appearances there were by pretty notable actors and actresses. It's like Seinfeld. Like, you don't realize how many people...
Show everyone was on.
Went through that show.
Yeah. Or the Dana Carvey show. Like how everyone on Earth was a part of that one.
At one point.
Yeah. It also has self-cleaning...
Randy Savage... was on it.
Randy Savage?
Yeah, in 1996 for one episode. Ed McMahon was on.
Wow.
Sorry, I'll stop now.
Wasn't like George Burns on an episode?
I don't know. You can't scroll through this whole list because it will make your browser crash because it's about 10,000 people long.
Well, looks like IPDB is dying on me anyway. I'm trying to get some more information on the self-cleaning pop bumper switches.
You don't have it.
I don't have it, but somehow it has self-cleaning pop bumper switches. Is that like a ripoff of the auto switches from Gottlieb?
I don't know.
What does Gottlieb call those? They're switches you never have to adjust. Leaf switches. Allegedly, you never need to adjust.
But you do.
So Cameron and I had talked about trading games. We were going to trade X-Men and Baywatch so we could both put some time in each other's games. And then I sold X-Men, so... I'm going to have to talk him into something else. Maybe he wants Batman for a while. I don't know.
That'd be good.
Or, Roadshow. Everyone loves Roadshow, right? We got to talk about how great that game is. Again. And again. Let me look up prices real quick. What do you think average is?
My guess would be that Baywatch would be about a... I'd say about a $2,000 game.
Yeah, I could see even bumped up a little bit more in this climate and with the cheese factor kind of working for it right now.
Yeah, it's old enough now of a theme that for some people they're going to get a pretty strong nostalgic kick out of it.
Yeah. The average is $1,100, but the reason for that is there's a couple low ones in there. Like one sold in January for $700 on eBay in just decent shape.
If I could get an $1,100 one that was fully working, I'd
hell yeah, man.
Do it right now.
I mean, the DMD is like $600 if you have to replace it. It looks like about $1,400 is the other couple that sold.
Wow.
I'm surprised it's that low.
Surprised.
Yeah. Let me double check.
That's a bang for your buck machine right there, people.
Heck yeah. Yeah. If you can hang with that theme, it's a lot of fun.
I'm kind of at the point where themes like that, where like I never liked the show, but it's just so, it's so 90s that it's kind of awesome.
Estimated price on Pinside is $2,300. So okay. They might be selling more with collectors. Let me see if there's any listed in the market. Nope, somebody just wants one, but there's none listed for sale right now.
Man, think how awesome it would be if we had more super 90s themes. Like, especially like now we've had a lot of like music ones, like 90s music stuff would have been hilarious. Like, PM Dawn, the pinball machine.
PM Dawn, yeah. Days of the New Pinball Machine. $2,800 or best offer. There's one on eBay.
That's pretty high.
Yeah, there's a decent amount of parts available, actually. Looks like.
I bet you they've parted some out. Yeah.
$2,600. Watch it now. This might be one where a cabinet fade wouldn't really hurt it that bad because it's like a sunset scene by the beach. Not saying that washed out games would fit the theme, but it wouldn't be quite as noticeable because there's already got those light colors. There's a lot of plastics available. $3,300 on eBay.
Well, since it didn't win the classic, sell your Whirlwinds and get a Baywatch.
Yeah. Maybe I'll see if Cameron wants his Whirlwind back and take his Baywatch. No. Actually, I moved my Whirlwind yesterday. I need to get it set up still. How long does it take to swap a playfield, do you think?
Well, this one looks crazy.
No, no, not this one.
For something like Whirlwind?
Yeah, yeah. What, 20 hours? Maybe more?
Yeah, I would say so.
That shouldn't be too bad if you can 2 hours a night for a month or something.
Well, that'd be 60 hours, but that's okay.
I know, but I don't know. I feel like when you're in the groove, you work a lot faster than if you're having to stop and start every day.
Yeah, especially for a playfield swap.
Yeah, and the first one. Probably double my time. Oh, well. Getting off topic. Wow. An NOS topper. $300.
For Baywatch? For
Baywatch, yeah.
Oh, I thought you were going to say Whirlwind. I'm like, that should be more. Yeah.
No, Baywatch. This is one of the first games with a team mode, too. Where players 1 and 3 are on a team, 2 and 4 are on a team. Or then a 6 player, who knows. Can you do a 6 player team game, I wonder?
I don't know either.
I should look up and see who wanted us to do Baywatch. Did I write it down?
They're so disappointed us right now.
No, they're like, these guys don't have a dick. I'm looking. Talk while I'm looking.
Despite the knowledge of the finer, yeah, I was gonna say, despite the knowledge of the finer points of it, I think that people who get a chance to play it will be pretty surprised by how much effort was put into making Baywatch. I guess it was still kind of in the middle of its run at that point, but it's kind of one of those games that, like, say The Shadow or something, that if you don't know anything about pinball and say all of the games are lined up before you, you probably wouldn't walk to it first.
No.
But when you got on it, you're like, hey, yeah, this is pretty good. Yeah. This is good stuff.
Something different.
I think it's a pleaser in that regard.
I'm trying to think of where, if there's anything noticeable as far as areas that wear, parts that break. John Oath, by the way, is the gentleman who recommended we do it.
Yeah. Thanks, John. I've seen wear around the stand-ups, on the one that I've seen, and that's common with any pinball machine that has stand-ups. One of the cool things about this is some of the informational inserts are kind of below or above the slingshot, so you don't get a lot of middle of machine wear in it. That's good. I'd say if you broke your shark flipper, good luck sourcing another.
Yeah, I mean, you could replace it with a normal one, but it's not nearly as cool.
Yeah, I've seen a lot of wear in the very back where that up kicker is, straight up the middle, And that's again common of upkickers. The hole kind of blown out around it.
Yeah, so. I think I've seen the shark hole take some damage because it's got a pretty vicious kick to it. Wait.
Yes. Yeah.
It does kick back, right? I really sound like I don't know what I'm doing.
Yeah, that's a scoop. Yeah, that's a scoop.
What else was I gonna say? Oh, the light colors probably make it look dirtier faster, but a lot of Sega games clean up pretty good though. A lot of Stern games period clean up pretty good.
It's not bad in that regard. Trying to think if there's anything else. I know that the pop bumpers have a little custom art on them, so
like a decal or something.
Yeah, they shouldn't wear anything, but that's kind of one of those things that if they're gone, you're going to be left making your own, most likely. Mm. It's a pretty tanky game. I wouldn't worry too much about it.
Yeah. Thinking about it, I've never seen one that's like blown out or roached or anything.
No. Huh.
So. Cool. Well, there's Baywatch. Yay.
I'll always be there for you, Don.
Thanks. It was funny the first time you said it.
I sang it the first time.
Yeah, maybe that was where it came from.
That's why it was funny.
And the software, Oren Day, of course, was in there. Lonnie Ropp, John Carpenter was moonlighting as a pinball.
Took some time off his directorial work.
Yeah, and Neil Falconer. Somebody complained years ago that we don't talk enough about the guys who built the games.
I'm sorry.
So we just mentioned their names. I don't know if that counts.
I think we'd made a good connection with the Balser Wizard of Oz thing.
Yeah. And Balser also did Hobbit, so. Still working, but I don't think he's working with Jersey Jack anymore. This is an aside. Do you know what's up with that? Balser and Jersey Jack?
I don't. I do know that Jason Momoa, who is playing Aquaman in an upcoming DC movie.
Yeah.
Was on 44 episodes of Baywatch.
Okay.
Yeah.
There's a lot of rumblings about Balser and Jersey Jack having fallen out, but I didn't know why.
Yeah, I've heard that, but I haven't heard anything really concrete, so I've just kind of...
Yeah, let it go.
Like, yeah, I don't know. I would like to know, though, if someone has any insider info, any dirt they're willing to just let us know about.
Sure. Jack Lydon... did the Dots. He's still working. He did Dots on Metallica and WrestleMania recently. Kurt Anderson also.
That's cool.
That's out there. Marcus Rothkranz did the art. See, the thing with like Data East games and Sega and whatnot is that it's like the same crew works on every game. Just like John Norris on Gottlieb. Like John Norris did every Gottlieb game.
Yeah, that's true.
You don't want to be...
And about half of them transitioned into Stern.
Yeah, a lot of them. Across the border there.
He also did the art on Aaron Spelling, so that's good to know.
And Arnon Milchan or whatever, right?
Yeah.
Who is that guy? Is he a movie producer or something?
I don't know.
I always see that game, Arnon Milchan or whatever.
I don't know. I don't know what it is.
Does Arnon Milchan still have his game, I wonder?
I would hope so.
It's a Lethal Weapon. Oh, no, that looks like a, is that a Lethal Weapon? Or a Last Action Hero?
Last Action Hero, I think.
Yeah, it is a Last Action Hero.
Yeah.
Anyway, that's an aside. That's our, feature machine, Arnon Milchan.
Arnon Milchan next yes. game, so come back for that.
Yes. Okay, so we remembered to rate this one. I almost forgot to talk about it. Alright, so our combined rating... according to the Pinside theorem,
algorithm. Yes.
Oh crap! It's a 7.180. Yeah, 7.1805, which is weird because
that's gonna be strong.
World Cup Soccer was 7.8105. This is 1805. Confusing. Anyway, it's not that strong. It puts it way down at number 30. No, number 29.
So it beat Scared Stiff.
I think we need to redo Scared Stiff at some point.
Well, what happened is on some of the earlier episodes, like the first 15, 20 episodes, that was before Pinside's ranking stuff changed. So we have a lot of ratings on those that are super out of whack.
Yeah. The only podcast with Scared Stiff in the, well, now in the bottom third, whatever, barely in the top 30.
Yeah. Yeah, that's
crazy. All right. Well, it's right between Sky Jump and Scared Stiff. It's right below Sky Jump. Whatever.
But above Scared Stiff. Yeah.
Whatever. Well, Scared Stiff is one of those games. I think you like it a lot more than I do, so that kind of screwed it. Same with Iron Man. NBA Fast Break is one I like a lot and you don't like as much, so that kind of screwed that one.
I like it, just not too much.
Games that were really split on end up in the bottom, but games that were together on, like Twilight Zone, of course, number one, they end up a lot higher.
And then there's games where we both think they should be higher, like...
like Scared Stiff and Iron Man.
Or maybe Congo should be up a few more spots.
Yeah. Weird. And then some of them, like Roadshow and Judge Dredd, I just waited the hell out of them because I like them so much. And
that's
and they're
fine.
Okay in Jeff's book. Well, Adam's Family is really high, and I don't like that game that much. That was all you.
Yeah. One day we'll reevaluate, because I don't think Elvira and the Party Monster should be at 7 with Scared Stiff down at 20. Well, no, you know what? I like Party Monsters more. So never
mind.
I do too. I'm not going
to. That's how it ended up up there. We reviewed those on the same episode, episode 10.
Yeah.
I would say don't go listen to it because it probably is awful.
Oh, episode 10 had to have been Dark Days for us. But.
Okay. There it is, Feature Machine. Thank you guys for listening to all that. I want to talk real quick on Virtual Tables. Zen Pinball announced Avengers Age of Ultron is coming soon to Zen platform. And I would guess that Jackpot should be here any day now on Pinball Arcade.
Yeah, it's got to be pretty close.
I don't know what the deal is with that. Okay. Anything else you want to talk about, Jeff?
Just real quickly, this was something someone IM'd me, and I don't know why, but it was after I mentioned California Extreme last year and my glorious second place finish in the B division. So they were just saying, like, hey, I haven't had a lot of tournament experience, and the biggest reason I don't do well is I get nervous, and the second biggest reason is I can't nudge very well. And they said tournament machines are really hard to practice for because nudging is so much different on those than they are at home. So just what were a couple of tips for someone who wants to start playing in tournaments? And, you know, they cost money, so they don't want to just feel like they're wasting their money. So my answer to that is I just barely started doing the tournament stuff pretty recently myself. I think I've been very lucky in my finishes. But I've made some finals and it's fun. As far as the nerves go, like, I kind of think that that is something that's either going to go away with time or it's just your nature to get nervous. So the answer to that is just keep playing and you should get more comfortable with the feeling overall. If not, just know you're the nervous type and try and manage it the best you can. One thing I do, and since I started doing it, it's helped a ton, is I put earphones in and I play some music when I go up. I don't listen to the game. I don't listen to the people behind me. I don't pay attention to the person yelling at the machine next to me who just drained out. And I know that, like, for some games, you're going to want to hear it because of certain rules or countdowns or timers. Honestly, I think just if you're in a tournament setting, you should know the game well enough that you don't have to hear it that well. And that just drowns out so much distraction. So that's one thing. Plus, a song you really like, whatever, it can calm you. It can help you kind of find a groove to where you feel like you're in rhythm. Try that. That helps. As far as the nudging goes, you're right. Like, even at home, if you take out your posts and you set your tilts super tight, it's not quite the same because you might be playing on carpet and they're playing on a hard floor in a tournament, and it's just different. So one of the things just to remember is just the simple concepts of nudging, that you just have to remember, if you push your machine to the right, the ball floats left. If you push the machine to the left, the ball floats right. You're moving the machine under the ball, essentially, when you nudge. The other thing is don't forget to punch up. When the ball's coming near those out lanes, they're so tightly set up that you generally cannot slide the machine and save it. You're better off just punching upwards and letting that post move upwards into the ball and getting it bouncing around up and down, or giving yourself a better chance to gain control that way. Slap save is also big thing to practice, but you're right. It's really hard to practice for that. More than anything, you're going to have a few tilts in your first times on the machines, and you'll kind of learn where the breaking point is on those games. But just remember the basics of it, and just remember you have to do it with a little bit more finesse. There's not a whole lot you can do there. And then, I don't know, just my thing is, don't feel like you have to play to win the tournament, because there are people who've been doing this for years and years, like over a decade, and they're really, really good at pinball, and more than just good at pinball, they're really, really good at tournament pinball, and that makes a big difference. And so I've had some, you know, finishes in top 10, I've had a 2, and it's more than I ever hoped for. So once I got to a certain point, I was like, you know what, if I make the finals cut, I'm happy with that, and everything I do from there, it's just bonus time. So set goals to just play better each time you go, play against yourself, and then eventually when you start making that last day of competition, then you can start looking at the people you're playing with, trying to beat them. But till then, just try and maximize your skills, and I think you'll really enjoy it, and the nerves should fade away when you know you're playing your best pinball. So
that's that. Yeah, thank you for that. Your thing with the headphones, I should really try that, because I let background noise really distract me.
Yeah. In fact, I have the last tournament I played in that I did not bring my headphones, I made it to like the last 4, and during my last game, I did not need half as many points as I typically would score on the game I was playing, and I actually started out playing really well on it, and people were standing around talking, and everyone was kind of watching at that point because we were down to the final 4, and I totally lost concentration, and I think if I had my earphones in, I would have stayed zoned in for that last ball, and I lost by essentially what was the difference of like 1 ramp shot from going to the final, so that's okay, but I definitely knew that if I had had my headphones, it would have been a difference maker.
Yeah, and I wanted to mention in League, I'm not a great player, but when I really just sat down and focused on being a good player, it made a big difference when I was playing, if that makes sense. Instead, I like to shoot on the fly because it's fun and it feels better, but League and tournaments aren't about having fun in a sense. I mean, they are, of course. That's why you're there, but when it's go time, sometimes you have to just focus on catching that ball and making controlled shots.
Yeah, you have to play, you know, what style you are most successful with. Sure. But that's like kind of first level. But second level is you got to play the machines the way they're set up. And a lot of them are just, you can't afford to play that on the fly style, because if you miss a shot, it can be a drain. Yeah. Now, a couple of the best players in the world play on the fly. That's how Robert Gagnon plays. He plays on the fly. Josh Henderson does a lot of on the fly shots. So if it's your strength, then go with it. Yeah. Secret weapon number 1 is Radiohead's "Everything in Its Right Place," turned up just loud enough to be almost uncomfortable, and you're good.
So we'll make some pinball playlists.
I'll make a mixtape. Yeah.
I look forward to that, actually. That'd be fun.
Yeah.
And it was the listener who gave us that donation. His name is Dave. So, Dave, thanks so much. I took a minute to look it up. I don't know why I was being lazy earlier. I'm sorry. Thank you so much for checking out the show, Dave.
Yes. Thanks, Dave.
And I also wanted to mention, I bought some Laserific signs for Roadshow, and I stuck those in, and they look awesome.
Oh, they looked great. Yeah. Like, they were so vivid. Like, I thought those looked awesome.
My dad doesn't notice anything about anything, and he noticed. We were looking at Tron, and he's like, "Oh, these look cool." And he hasn't played Roadshow in years, but he noticed. Yeah, they look great. Nice big green signs with the laser cut white writing. Looks great.
Yeah, I liked it.
Thank you. And I also forgot Juan. Juan gave us a location report. Let me shoehorn it in here real quick. He went to Zanzibar in Louisville, Kentucky. The web address is zanzibarlouisville.com. He went with Brent and Whitney from Broken Token, and they played some games. Let me pull up his pictures. I'll post some in the thread. I just had it here. But they've got like a brand new Walking Dead with the topper and the whole deal. I think they had Attack from Mars. Let me see. They've also got arcade games though too. And of course, it's going really slow now. Okay, Walking Dead. It's got Donkey Kong and Joust and those kind of classic arcade games. Miss Pac-Man, Dolly Parton. I'm not going to go through the whole thing, but it's got Twilight Zone, Addams Family, Star Trek Next Gen, Medieval. So he said it was definitely worth checking it out. He had a great time there. So it looks like really dark, but it's a kind of a bar setting too. So obviously Zanzibar. So if you got kids, maybe heads up, check out their site first. But it's like all A-list games. So very, very cool. And it was a Walking Dead awesome. LE, by the way.
Oh, nice. Yeah.
So anyway, all right. I think that's it for the show. Where are we at? 1:30. Perfect. Trying to keep it a little bit tighter here. Anything from Joe Zinkus at the end of the show?
Not this one. Okay.
Thank you so much for listening. We really appreciate it. If you have any comments or feedback, email us pinballpodcast@gmail.com. This episode of the Pinball Podcast was sponsored by niftyled.com. Again, check them out. They're a great sponsor. Thank you to NiftyLED for helping us keep the show going. You can see us on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram if you just search for Pinball Podcast, one word. And we're The Pinball Podcast on Google+. You can also read all about us on thepinballpodcast.com. And you'll see a little write-up about March Madness coming up and hopefully some other articles as well. If you're fiending for articles, I noticed Pinball News put up a couple of things. And, of course, we love the guys at credit.pinball.com and Pinball Supernova. So check those out, too. And, Jeff, thank you so much for doing the show with us. I don't know why I say with us. It's not like I'm the host. We're both hosting, but I love you.
Yeah, thank you for not coughing.
Yeah, it went great.
No,
glad I took a handful of pills. Yeah. All right.
Very good. Good night.